Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
There was a piece that was out earlier this year that by Alex Morris of Rolling Stone, who noted the headline was Michael Fanon has a lot to say about the January 6th pardons, including his own. And it says it goes on and it talks about how you didn't ask for a pardon. You don't want a pardon. Talk a little bit about why you feel that way, why you felt that way at the time, and what do you think is happening? What does it mean when these things started coming out that, you know, Trump was looking to pardon all these people and do all this stuff? Talk a little bit about your thoughts there.
Well, first, like with regards to the pardon for me, I mean, I'm not a listen, I'm a high school dropout. But I'm not a legal scholar,
right.
I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I do know the legal system from a layman's perspective or a police officer's perspective. And I know that our justice system is based on precedent. And I know that there's no precedent for giving a preemptive pardon. And so, you know, while I understand why President Biden provided me and some others with those pardons because he felt we may be, you know, targeted by the Trump administration, though we had done nothing wrong. I knew that what I needed to be protected from was the endless litigation that would be, that would go along with, you know, the investigations, and a pardon does not prevent any of that from happening. You know, the Trump administration, if they want to, can try to trump up some charges, no pun intended, and come after me. And then it's up to me to first invoke the pardon. Then, you know, we're probably going to end up going to the Supreme Court as to whether or not those pardons are legitimate. Meanwhile, I've gone broke like 1,000 times over trying to defend myself because I don't have, you know, significant means. I'm just a regular guy. So I guess it was kind of two part. One, I didn't want one for the optics of it, but two, I didn't want one because I don't think it's going to make a shit of a difference anyways. So, you know, that was that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's an important piece because when you look at the contrast between what Biden was offering and proposing in terms of the pardons that he was putting on the table for those related to January 6th versus what Trump had done when he came in shortly after that period, after Biden made those offers, really offers up a contrast. But the result is the same in the sense that, as we see with some of the Trump pardons, there are questions about them and whether or not they'll be, you know, litigated down the road remains to be seen. You know for sure the Biden pardons would have been. The Trump people would have come in immediately, to your point, tried to do an end run to upend that and really question Biden's ability to use and employ a pardon power, while at the same time Trump was doing exactly that for people he liked, and whether or not the system could actually make the distinction between the two was a little bit problematic. But it does raise the broader question, I think, of how our government now sees itself functioning in this somewhat bifurcated way when a Democrat is in charge versus when a Republican is in charge. And like you said, you know, you're just an everyday guy and, you know, you pay your taxes, you're raising your kids, you're trying to keep the wife from being too mad at you on any given day. You know, you're doing these things that people do every day of their lives. And yet we're living in this time where we're asked. One of the benefits, I think, of being, which is something I think you appreciate, of being a police officer is that you didn't have to, right? You, the only side you were on was the side of the Constitution and the oath you swore to protect and defend it and the citizens you served. It's how do your fellow officers now, some 4 years, where 2020, well, yeah, 5 years later, feel about and perceive this system, particularly those who are still serving in it on the Capitol Hill or in DC police? What are you hearing from them?
I mean, within the DC Police Department, you know, I think there's a sense of, or at least there was a sense of disbelief that, number one, this could happen. That is like thousands of Americans attacking the Capitol. Right. And it would be so quickly forgotten. I mean, listen, like I get a lot of attention because I've been very outspoken. Those officers, the ones that continued to do the job, the ones that showed up for work on January 7th while I was in the hospital, they didn't receive the accolades or the praise or, you know, all of the things that like myself and Harry Dunn and Sergeant Gunnell and even Danny Hodges received.
So right.
For them, just like it was life continued. And then they experienced, you know, all the horrible things that I experienced without any of the adulation. You know, they saw Republican lawmakers downplay and, you know, deny what happened that day. And they've seen Republican officials that have now been appointed by the president or, you know, people who've been elected on the idea that they think that, you know, the people that assaulted cops were patriots, the president included in that, and that the police officers that day were the aggressors and that they were somehow the enemy. And so I think within the DC police and Capitol police, these guys are just disillusioned.
Yeah.
And kind of just like, well, fuck it. Mm-hmm. What's I think adds insult to injury is that the greater law enforcement community, that is like every agency that essentially didn't respond to the Capitol that day and doesn't know the realities of January 6th, has essentially sided with Trump.
Right.
And, you know, you see that in like the National Fraternal Order of Police,
yep.
President Pat Yost endorsing Donald Trump. I mean, just the idea of the largest law enforcement union in America endorsing a man who clearly, in front of all of our eyes, incited his followers to attack police officers at the Capitol on January 6th. And mm-hmm. then pardoned 500 plus individuals who were yep. charged with assaulting cops and either were found guilty at trial or pled guilty before trial. The six individuals that assaulted me that were charged all pled guilty. No one went to trial and they're all free. Some yeah. of them were sentenced, you know, upwards of 12 years in some pretty vile and vicious assaults, and Trump just made it all go away. And so,
the disgust from that a lot of us felt is palpable. I thought, though, you wrote a piece in your Substack on the 18th of this month, and I highly recommend folks to read what Michael wrote, which was an appeal to American law enforcement officers, an open letter to them. And you say in part, you, the American law enforcement officer, have been placed in an incredibly difficult situation, one where you must choose between obeying the immoral and often illegal orders given to you by your president, the attorney general, your state and federal prosecutors, and even those that lead your respective agencies, orders that violate our Constitution, which we all took an oath to uphold against enemies, both foreign and domestic. Now choosing to capitulate and follow these orders may bring you both promotion and adulation, and choosing not to follow such orders could bring disciplinary action against you, termination from employment, or even criminal prosecution. That said, you have the benefit of history and the lessons it has taught humanity. This lawless and immoral administration will be defeated. And when it is, you will have to answer this simple yet profound question. Which side were you on? Damn. You can't get any plainer than that.
Yeah, no, I mean, earlier in the piece, I talked about two moments in my career, which, you know, had pretty much all but gone forgotten until after January 6th. Because, you know, I was a cop, a DC cop for 20 years. I don't think I ever had a conversation outside of a classroom environment in which I thought about or talked about my role in protecting our Constitution and ensuring that Americans had a right to everything that's afforded under that document. I mean, I wasn't violating the Constitution.
Right.
I certainly wasn't thinking of myself as someone who was responsible for, you know, for making sure that that every American, you know, had their you know, enjoyed those rights.
Those rights, yeah.
And so I guess like the point of that was that I went to these seminars in which we, you know, one of them was at the Holocaust Museum, and we talked about German police and their role in, you know, arresting Jews for the simple fact of being Jews, and also their involvement in seizing property from these individuals and you know, redistributing it amongst the Nazi party, and how immoral that was and how outrageous that was. And I remember being outraged myself and thinking, like, why the hell am I here? This would never happen in America. I would never get involved in anything like this. And the second one was a little bit more difficult, I think, for me to dismiss. But I went to the National Museum of African American History in D.C., and I remember sitting through a lecture and learning about how, you know, law enforcement's role in, you know, capturing runaway slaves and law enforcement's role enforcing Jim Crow, which I think, you know, we should all agree were immoral, unethical, and, you know, it was abomination.
Well, it's the genesis of the creation of police forces in the country was to be about the business of going out and capturing slaves and keeping them in check. So you're right.
So, like, I mean, unfortunately, when I started coming to these, you know, realizations, I had already, you know, I was no longer a cop, but at first I started thinking about like how valuable a lesson that would be when, you know, cops that police communities of color, especially white cops like myself, who are trying to figure out why there's all this fucking resentment and anger that I feel is undeserved. Well, if you go back, not even 100 years, go back 50 years and you can see why these communities have such disdain for law enforcement officers. Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.